All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the In the Dome podcast. Okay, let's get into some news. We'll get into camp. We'll get into, the latest news is the Stars and Canucks having a pause because of COVID reasons. The Stars are going to have their first few games delayed, so that's a bigger news, but it sounds like the Canucks camp is already going to commence again tomorrow. So it's just like a 1 day layout.
Even in the tweet that whoever sent it out said, I think Vancouver released it, obviously. It was like, what was the wording? It was like extreme caution. So,
okay.
It was like, they weren't too concerned about it. It sounded like they're just doing it to be extra careful.
Cause when the Canucks news came out, you were freaking out, dude. You texted me and you're like, if this doesn't happen, you might consider, you know,
I'm going to kill myself if there's no hockey soon, to put it plainly. That's all I have left.
It's going to happen soon. I mean, the reason why I know is look at all these other leagues. They're doing it. So there's no reason why the NHL can't do it.
Thank you for talking me off a ledge.
Anytime. Okay. So waiver wire today, or was it yesterday? It was today, right? So
yeah, it was today.
Domingue gets sent down. Petrovic gets sent down. Brendan Frace, Buddy Robinson, and Justin Kirkland. No surprises there across the board, except for maybe Domingue, because as far as the taxi squad, don't you have to have three goalies?
Yeah, the one I was surprised about, Domingue, and I was kind of a little surprised that Ronaldo wasn't sent down.
Oh, you would be. You shouldn't be.
Like, I shouldn't be, but I... exactly. I shouldn't be, but, you know, like, I kind of expected him, like... I just don't see the point of having Buddy Robinson and Zach Ronaldo and Brett Ritchie on your team, but I was just a little surprised that he wasn't on his way down, but whatever.
Well, they'll keep him around, and the PTO is now official, right?
Yeah. Brett Ritchie is the official PTO, the official mystery PTO.
Yeah. So where does that put us as far as forwards? We're looking at what, 15, but like, aren't 15 going to stay on the team? I don't think Ronaldo will be getting sent down. He'll be on the taxi squad
for sure.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to do the quick math. Taxi squad, you got to think that Ronaldo, obviously, who else? I think somebody like Godin might be. And then maybe if Brett Ritchie, maybe he's the guy.
Philip?
They'll probably want
Philip playing games, but it's going to be a while till the AHL gets going.
Yeah, right? I'd rather have Godin in on the taxi squad than Phillips, just because, like you said, I want Phillips playing games. So I would say Yellison or Stone is the last guy in the taxi squad there. But I wouldn't be surprised to see them sign Richie now that he's still in camp, would you?
No, probably.
I don't know.
You know Brad.
Yeah, and the other one is maybe since the WHL doesn't have anything solid yet, maybe you see Connor Zeri stick on the taxi squad for a little bit just to practice with the NHL team until the Western Hockey League gets going. I don't know. I doubt he'll play, but if he's got nothing else to do, maybe they'll just have him in camp just or with the guys practicing and stuff.
He won't play, but Brad loves bringing these young guys up and getting them involved in camps really early, which I don't mind. Makes sense.
I don't mind that.
So by the time this pod drops, we're 4 days away from game one.
Opening night.
So this roster is going to start to shape up pretty quick, I would imagine. I don't think there's really any question marks other than what will the lines look like. So let's get into that because we've had some line updates this weekend. And I'm kind of digging both of these. I cautioned on the last podcast of being, too excited about giving Simone a top six role right off the hop. I think you have guys there. If Mond is going to drop down, you got to be kidding me.
Exactly. And you were cautioning on the cool it with the let's try every goddamn conceivable combination known to man here. We have to have some kind of, there's got to be a limit on how many times we fuck with the lines.
Yeah. But based on the consistency that we have seen throughout camp, it's going to be safe to assume that your top line going forward to start the season will be Matthew Tkachuk, Elias Lindholm, and somebody else.
Yeah. Because the two constants we've seen, Tkachuk, Lindholm, Gaudreau, Monahan together.
Yeah. And throughout that, the Tkachuk, Lindholm has been the first line. So I hope there's strategy behind this as far as Ward's concerned with protecting Johnny and Monty as far as the defensive zone goes, giving more offensive starts. And hey, isn't that what your second line? That's how you kind of do the matchup game. So now the other notable consistent thing, right, has Backlund as a third line center on this team currently.
Yeah, and I guess if they're committing to Lindholm as your top center, that's the way it shakes out.
Now, dating back to most of last season, basically until the second half, and even beyond that, you and I have always been hard advocates for moving Backlund down to the third line center, just due to it open with, if Backlund's not your third line center, then your whole roster is kind of, or your forward group is all kind of mishmashed, mishmangled. You can't really get the best combos you want. Whether it's Backlund or Monty, one of those guys has to be third line center. I don't think you can roll with him as 1-2 anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it even goes beyond okay, if Monahan and Backlund are your 1-2, you better have a good three. And they've never really had a good three.
Yeah.
Jankowski, then it was Bennett. I mean, I think Derek Ryan can maybe do it, but that's still pushing it. So I think this is finally what the team's been needing to do for a while. And I don't think it's a sled on Backlund, right? You saw how well he played down the stretch last year. I don't think it's he sucks, so he should be on the third line. But it just makes your team so much stronger down the middle.
Yeah. So far on this Chucky Lindholm pairing, we've seen Levo, we've seen Simone, we've seen Mangiapane, and now it's Dubé. Out of those four, what do you like the most? Keeping in mind with Dubé on the top line now, they have Monge with Johnny and Monty. So I want to hear your opinions on both those.
Well, I like the fact, I like the Mangiapane in the top six. I think that's a non-negotiable, even though I think they do like the Backlund Mangiapane pairing. I still would prefer, just if we're talking about, okay, opening night, what we're going to see, I still would like to see them reunite the Tkachuk Lindholm Mangiapane trio, just because they were so goddamn good last year. Their skill sets mesh so well. That was the best the Flames top line looked all year last year. And I mean, if this is your strategy, you're putting Lindholm at center, you're having Tkachuk on his wing, you're obviously kind of subscribing to the notion that you want a top line that can play in all three zones, that can drive play, you can start them wherever you want. Mangiapane is the best 5-on-5 player this team had last year. I think he just fits better with those two guys. And like, honestly, I think Dubé would actually work really well with Gaudreau and Monahan too.
Okay.
So I think you just flip those two guys, I'd be super happy.
Okay. Cause I kind of like the way they are now. I almost feel like, because you see it so often, you've seen it so many times with Sam Bennett, when you have guys that are not, you know, superstar caliber play with superstars, it's like, I think it's a mental thing more than anything. They just don't seem to be able to make it work. I don't know why that is. Most likely they're probably overthinking and they're trying to set up Johnny. Like how many times can you remember, how many pairings did we used to try with Jerome Iginla, right?
Oh, dude.
You have like everybody in the multiverse got their chance playing with him and they all would just try and pass to him in every single situation. It was the easiest thing to defend. It was so obvious what everybody's trying to do. And it's, I don't know, maybe it's kind of like that in a sense where when Bennett gets up with those guys, like he's lost, he's trying to be too pretty. He should just keep it simple. Let's give him a shot. Let's see what Dubé looks like with those two, with Johnny and Monty. But I almost feel like Johnny and Monty and Monge might actually be the solution for who needs to play with Johnny and Monty that can elevate their game. And I don't know how you think about this, because if you look at the analytics, you know, Monge, like you said, he's the best 5-on-5 player as of last season. Would he not elevate their game in the defensive end, or would it not have an impact because he's not a centerman?
Well, I think it would help for sure, but it's just, for me, it's like, okay, well, you're trying to squeeze as much juice out of this top six as possible, right? So it's like, okay, well, how do we maximize these players' strengths? It's like you have a guy who's great in his own end in Mangiapane. Like, are you really going to kind of neuter his 5-on-5 play driving with two guys who aren't very good in their own zone? I think that's the balance you're probably trying to look at there.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, to me, it's like pairing Gaudreau with a guy like, if you had Gaudreau on Backlund and Mangiapane's wing, it's like, well, the purpose that line would serve would to play a lot in the defensive zone. And then you've got this guy who's maybe not as good in his own zone. It's just, it seems like, I don't think you're not getting as much out of Mangiapane possibly, right, if you're going to play him with those two guys, because then like, well, he's the only guy who can play defense on that line. And maybe that's a good thing, but just, yeah, I just see that Lindholm, Tkachuk, Mangiapane line being such an elite all three zones line that it's just like, well, why not play everybody to their strengths here? It's not like Dubé is great in his own zone. So I don't know. It's just, if you're going to use Mangi, if you're going to have those line combinations, I would just switch Dubé and Mangiapane. And I really like the looks of those lines. So it just kind of depends on how they're going to use them, I guess.
Yeah. So what you're saying basically is Mangi is such a great two-way player. You'd hate to see him be separated from two other great two-way players that makes a great two-way line.
Right.
In Tkachuk and Lindholm or Backlund, whatever it is.
But I do agree with you with he can elevate, right? Like he could play with those two guys, no problem. It's just, he's so good in his, we've seen him be so good in his own zone. It would just be maybe kind of presumptive to put him with, again, it all depends on what you're trying to do here, I guess.
And especially being a winger, right? If he was a centerman, it would probably be a different story because he's kind of, you know, the engine on that line as far as how well they are defensively. Because if Monty, you know, if he kind of stinks in his own end, and that is the case, then having Monge play on the wing probably isn't even going to elevate his defensive game that much anyways.
Well, and then the other thing is too, that I kind of like Dubé with those two guys is he does, I don't know. I just kind of feel like that's an element they haven't really had. They've had in the past with a guy who's like physical, like Ferland, maybe a good shooter like Chiasson, but they really haven't had somebody who's got all three of those, or all both of those aspects. And Dubé, it's like Dubé can forecheck, Dubé plays physical. Dubé can fly through the neutral zone. Dubé's got enough skill to play with those guys. It's just he could be, I think he could fit, mesh really well with those two guys.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I also like.
We've seen Dubé play in limited ice time with Monahan too, and it looked okay. So.
Yeah. Regardless, I think we'll start to see it. So Monday, is that the game where they're going to live stream the?
They're going to scrimmage on Monday. Yeah, and it's going to be streamed.
So if you're listening to this on Monday, then tonight we'll get a live stream. I wouldn't be surprised if they roll with these lines. But then again, this is kind of like your stacked one-sided roster, so they're going to split this into two teams, but still, they probably have these lines.
Yeah, I imagine so. And I mean, maybe there's some wiggle room. Like if you're going to go with these, I kind of like this. Maybe I'm kind of warming up towards kind of pairing, like you're going with the pairs. You're going with Lindholm, Kachuk. You're going with Monahan and Gaudreau, and this kind of filtering out some guys, depending on what you're doing. So
maybe Backlund Levo as a third line pairing.
Dude, if you're third line, I know they had Lucic skating with Backlund and Levo today, which I didn't really like.
Yep.
If you go like Simone, Backlund, Levo, I think that's a nice looking. That's the best the top nine would look in years.
I wonder what Sam Bennett, Backlund, Levo would do too. Like that'd be good too.
Yeah, totally.
Regardless though, I think we might be onto something with if that's your pairing, Backlund, Levo, because hey, we've been saying it for so long. It's not necessarily that Backlund is a for sure third line center. He can play second line center minutes in that role. We've seen him do that. But if Monahan and Backlund are arguably both fringe, then one of them has to be a 3C. You can't have two fringe top six guys in your top six centers in your top six.
Totally. And I think the other thing to note on Backlund too is like, as good as he has been in his career as a Flame in his own zone, like he hasn't been that two-way guy.
Yeah.
The last three, probably maybe even pushed it back to 15, 16, where he's been like a legit two-way force. Like he's really been a lot of offense and not a lot of defense, despite what a lot of people may think. So his defensive game has fallen back as the years have gone on. Maybe if he gets a few less minutes, maybe a few less really tough minutes, you give those minutes to Lindholm, maybe you'll squeeze more juice out of Michael Backlund as well.
Yep. And then as far as Dubé goes, I'm not sure if even if he starts on the first line, if he can hold that spot through an entire season. I want to see him up there, but I just don't know if he has all the tools sharpened quite enough yet to be able to maintain that. Maybe in a couple of years though.
Yeah, no, I agree. I still think he has some things to work out. There are probably still some parts of his game that are like, okay, you can do that in junior, but you know, you can do that in the AHL, but not in the NHL.
Yeah. But I'm just kind of imagining now, like even just the combo of Dubé with Chucky, what could they create together? And then you throw Lindholm in the mix. That could be a really awesome line.
Oh, I know. Like, and the thing is like, he's again, like if he can put it all together, he's fast. He's physical, right? Like dude hits.
Yeah.
Like he's one of the most physical Flames like in the playoffs for sure.
Yeah.
He forechecks like crazy. He can move the puck through the neutral zone very well. I think better on the left than wing than on the right wing. But I mean, dude could be the whole package and could really bring a lot to a line.
Yeah. So the fourth line today was Ryan, Bennett, and Nordstrom. Bennett's it sounds like good news. He's just day to day. Doesn't sound serious. He practiced today. And it sounds like they have him projected to start the season on time. So,
yeah,
but this is always the case with Sam, right? The guy can never catch a break. I think they wanted to try and give him top six chance to start off the season. And he comes in the training camp injured. Like this is vintage Sam Bennett to a T. The guy just is not destined for success.
He's gone. He's committed to the full head shave too.
Oh
yeah. I haven't seen his headshot yet, but I saw in some of the promo videos they do with like the green screen and shit. He said goodbye to what's left of his what's left of his hair that's holding on, and he's gone full buzz.
Yep.
So poor Sam, eh?
Yeah. So we'll see what happens to round at the season opener. But dude, like we have pretty good depth throughout all four lines as far as scoring capacity goes.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, I think the Levo acquisition, I'm kind of really starting to, I liked it. I'm liking it even more.
Yeah.
And the Simone one as well.
Just gives you that other option.
I think both of those are really good pickups. And because I was looking at like the team, again, we've been harping on it for a while. Like I was just looking at the opening night roster from 2018, and it's like that third line, like the third line was so bad with Jankowski and Neal. And yeah. I mean, even your second line, he had Frolik on there. So, I mean, the four groups looks a lot better than it did on that opening night. So,
yep. And then, so you're as of today, your 13th and 14th forwards are Simone and Ronaldo. And it wouldn't surprise me. I don't know. I guess we'll see. I'm curious to see who cracks the lineup and who doesn't. If this is Nordstrom in over Simone, or is it the other way around? Nordstrom had a nice little goal there if you saw the highlights.
It on his buddy Markstrom.
Yep. So
I don't know.
Markstrom just let him score on him, so he makes the team.
Exactly. All those Swedes are in on this shit.
Yeah. All right, and then they changed up the D pairings. So your thoughts on this, because both of us were saying that we like Gio and Anderson as a top pairing, given all the options. So the pairings today were Gio Anderson, Hanifin with Tanev, and then Vala Mäki-Nesterov, Mackie Stone was the final pairing, and Shillington was on the ice, but he didn't have a pairing. I guess he's just kind of getting his reps in now.
Yeah, he was in with Group B, and I know a lot of people were like, oh, is it punishment? It's like, no, he like literally just got here. He's, like you said, just getting his reps.
Punishment.
Right?
Yeah, you sucked because you haven't even played yet.
So, he was just getting his, like, that was the first time he skated, wasn't it? So, like, I'm sure it's not a big deal. And it doesn't mean he's not going to make the team. But I do, like, I think these are the pairings, the top four. I think you should roll into the opening night with at least and try it out, because we're going to get into a little bit of a discussion on Tanev today. But I mean, like, I just don't see a Gio Tanev top pairing working out really well. And I know we all liked what Hanifin and Anderson did last year, but if Rasmus Anderson's your arguably your best defenseman or your 1B defenseman, I really think he should be getting top pairing minutes.
Yeah.
So I was glad to see that shift today.
Okay, well, let's get into it. That's our focus for today, is to focus on the defensemen and notably the newcomers on defense. We'll go through a little focus on Tanev, Nesterov, and Mackie. But let's start with Tanev. Obviously, he was the biggest, you know, defensive signing in the offseason. And I know you kind of have your reservations, right?
To say
especially,
the least,
especially for the dollar amount that we signed him for.
Yeah.
As far as how he compares to Hamonic, and I guess, look, he's supposed to replace Brody, so you can compare him to Brody, but then that's just, you know.
No, Anderson is Brody's replacement.
That looks just black and white, but because they're not even close. But if you were to compare him to Hamonic, let's do that, because I think maybe that's a more fair comparison.
Yeah.
And sure, obviously between Anderson and Vala Mäki, maybe between the two of them throughout the season, that's Brody's real replacement. But
yeah,
I feel like Tanev is more so replacing Hamonic.
Yeah. Listen, like, I know everybody, like, you've probably listened to after we did the free agency one, I was just furious that they let Brody go and signed Tanev to this big deal. I don't like the deal is the main part of this. Like I've said, I wouldn't have minded if they had brought Chris Tanev in as like an accessory piece on like a 2-year deal. Even that money is way too much for him. So if you look at him compared to Hamonic, this is where it is kind of interesting, because what were we told about Hamonic, right? It was like, oh, we're getting a solid stay at home defenseman, right? He stays at home. He's very good in his own zone. It's like, dude was one of the worst defensive defenseman I've ever seen.
Yep.
Like, was he not? He was brutal in his own zone.
And he had to play with Hanifin. But what we started to see as far as pairings went over the course of, you know, the 3 years that we got to see him, is that the common denominator with bad pairings wasn't actually Hanifin, it was Hamonic.
Right, which was kind of surprising, because we were like, oh, they both suck. And then you saw Hanifin separated from Hamonic after he suffered some injuries and they did some stuff. And I was like, whoa, maybe he's not as bad as we thought. And then, you know, sure, sure shit, Hamonic comes back and looks like ass. So, again, I love Travis Hamonic, the guy, but his defensive game sucks. So I think if you're comparing those two things, that's the biggest difference in their game is that, okay, Travis Hamonic, for whatever reason, I don't know why this was the narrative, but we were told he was a defense-first defenseman. He wasn't. He was actually pretty good in terms of creating offense when he was on the ice. Like if you look at all his even strength offense numbers, I mean, even he put up some decent points for a guy who was supposedly the stay-at-home, never-score-anything kind of guy.
Yep. So he liked to join the rush. He liked to get up. He liked to join. Sure. I don't think he spent too much time below the tops of the circles on the offensive end, but he liked to be active as much as he could.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, I don't know how that got started. I don't know if that was just us being naive. I don't really remember because that was so long ago when we acquired Hamonic. But the thing that he was always promised that he was never came to fruition. He was never a good defenseman in his own zone. Chris Tanev has been that. Was it? Probably one of the most elite shutdown, like defense only, like deep shutdown, deep defensive. Like that's his role. He's a shutdown guy, like a true stay at home guy. Does nothing in the offensive zone, but is dynamite in his own zone. Chris Tanev, 3, 4, 5 years ago, was that like absolute, probably one of the best defensive defensemen in his own zone.
Yeah.
Really good in his own zone. So he has been that. He wasn't that last year. That has been my concern is the last 2 years you've seen a pretty massive fall off from Chris Tanev, specifically the parts of his game that he's known for being really good in the defensive zone and being like a reliable top shutdown guy. So in that respect, you can say like, okay, this is an improvement on Hamonic because he brings a different skill set, a skill set that Hamonic never had that definitely we needed that we were told Hamonic has, right? So like if you look at his career, like an absolutely formerly an effective defensive specialist who, you know, was so good in his own zone, so playing so many tough minutes against other teams' top lines. But then you look at the last 2 years, and I mean he's been injured so much. And I mean part of that is because he plays like a crazy person. He's never played a full season. He blocks every shot. He's like an absolute nut job. Have you seen this guy? Like he has no teeth left.
No teeth. Yeah. Stitches all over his face.
But the last 2 years, whether or not it's ability or age, his defensive play has steadily declined. And last year he was way below average in terms of his overall impact. So, I mean, prime Tanev, fuck yeah. Sign me up. Very impactful defensive skater. But I mean, now I don't know. It's just when you look at his decline, like market decline in the last 2 years, it is worrisome.
Well, especially for the dollar amount, like you said.
Yeah, and this term too.
Yep.
I don't know. It's a tough one, right? Because it's like, okay, we know what he used to be. And if he was that now, this would be a great pickup. And it would be an excellent replacement, I think, for Brody and a huge upgrade on Hamonic in the defensive zone.
Yeah.
But the question is, can he get back to that level?
And it's also interesting, like looking at Gio, right? Because compare the ages. So Tanev is 31. And how old is Gio?
Gio's 36. He's 37 now?
Yeah, I think he's 37 now. he gets a freak, right?
Gotten better with age. It's the opposite.
Just imagine that we had Tanev 3 years ago and exactly. Gio 3 years ago as if a top pairing.
If you had traded for Tanev that year that you traded for Hamonic, that's a hell of a defense. Because even in that year, like he fell off in 18-19, but even in 17-18, he had some great defensive numbers.
Yeah. Well, and Gio he hasn't really shown signs of regression, I would say, up until the playoffs. That could have just been a one-off thing coming off, you know, the weirdest year of all time.
Yeah.
So we'll see how he looks this season. But you got to expect Gio's game to drop off a bit. So if you have a combination of two guys that are, you know, on the dropping off side of things, you really got to manage their minutes. And to have them on the both together in the top pairing, I don't think gives you the best ability to do that. As much as, like we were just referenced, as sexy as this pairing looks, if you're looking at what these guys were 2-3 years ago, You got to be really careful with putting them together in the top pairing, just because they might struggle.
Well, and then the opposite of that, okay, well, if those two guys are together and they're not the top pairing and you have Hanifin and Anderson as your top pairing, like, I mean, that scares me. We haven't seen enough of Noah Hanifin's game has not developed in defensively enough to the point where I would trust him anywhere near playing top line hard minutes. And I mean, even with Tanev, if you play him on the top pairing, like, even ability aside, like, he's going to get hurt so quickly.
I talked to one of our family friends on the phone yesterday, and he's a Vancouver Canucks fan, lives in Vancouver. And, you know, we were talking about some of the off-season acquisitions. He was asking me about Hamonic. So he said, yeah, with Tanev, you're going to get a guy that, you know, he's a freak. He's a warrior. He'll literally block shots with his face if he has to. But on the other side of that, he's always injured because he just plays just the hardest, you know, level of hockey that you can.
Well, that was Hamonic too, right? Even though he wasn't very good in his own zone. Like, dude got broke his jaw in, like, game one of the season in a fight, remember? Standing up for Dubé.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he was always hurt. So, same kind of deal there. So, and I mean, again, he's older. Like, he's 31, which isn't old, but that's a hard... Because if you look at a lot of the aging curves, like, the one thing that doesn't really fall off as steeply is the defensive impact.
Yep.
For defensemen specifically, like, their offensive game has been known to really drop off a cliff at the age of like 30, even 29. But defensive impact has been able to stay relatively stable over, like, this was done over like a 10-12 year period. But I mean, he's played how many years? Like 10 years, a hard 9 or 10 years in the league, like hard top pairing minutes. He doesn't, like you said, he's blocking shots with his face. He's like playing against the top, like, on a Vancouver team who is not good defensively and hasn't been for a while. Like, this dude's been a warrior for a long time, and I can't imagine he's got a ton left in the tank.
Yeah. I'm actually predicting that within 20 games of the regular season, we'll see Valimaki slip into the top four.
That would be ideal, right?
Yeah. So let's get to know Chris Tanev a bit. Usually when we do a little bit of a player profile, we'll pull up Wikipedia, get into some fun facts. I know you love those.
You and your fun facts. Hey, you got any depressing fun facts?
It's funny because the only fun facts that I've had
were like not fun at all.
It's like, oh yeah, Hamonic's dad died when he was 10 and blah, blah,
literally,
blah.
You're like, hey, let's get into some fun facts. And so Lucci has a personal tragedy.
Lucci has a, what is it? Some sort of ill disease.
I'm like mortified by the end of your fun facts.
All right. So there's nothing more of it. Don't worry. Right. But so Tanev, he was undrafted. What I found interesting is he never played tier one junior. So he played junior A in Quebec or no, in Ontario.
I think he was Ontario.
Yeah, Ontario. And then basically the Canucks were scouting him because he went from junior A up into college, which is the other route you go, right? Mm-hmm. And in his first year in college, he just progressed like big time. I guess his last year of junior, he was the best player on the team. And then his first year in college under Rochester Institute of Technology, that's when he really started to turn it up. He was named as the Atlantic Hockey Rookie of the Year. So it's probably for that division. And then receiving all tournament and third team all-star honors. So he just started to come onto the scene. Vancouver was scouting him. There was other teams that were interested with him in him as well, but he actually signed with Vancouver and started his career kind of going in and out of the AHL. But then again, in his rookie year.
Yeah. He played, was it 2010? Or was he in the A that year? No, he played with Vancouver in 2010. I remember him watching him in the Stanley Cup final, even, I think he played. Because that's the year they made the finals.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, he played in the Stanley in the playoffs both times. Yeah,
because that was like one of the best Canucks team, probably one of the best teams of all time.
Yeah.
Got beat by the Bruins.
So, like you were saying, he's touted for his defensive abilities. And what I as far as, you know, doing a little bit of research and reading about this, what excites me about that is everybody links his defensive abilities as an awesome defenseman to his hockey sense. Yeah. And his puck moving ability. Now, as you age, your hockey sense declines a lot slower than everything else, right? Your mind is still sharp. It's usually your body and probably some of the puck moving ability declines a little bit. So if that is the case, I'm maybe not as concerned about his age as maybe I might if it was a guy like Noah Hanifin, a guy that lacks hockey sense, in my opinion. So, and then it's interesting. They say he's a non-aggressive player. So he probably doesn't take a lot of risks defensively. That's probably why he just elects to block shots all the time. So it's not like, I don't think he's getting injured from many hits as much as it is from blocking shots, most likely.
Well, yeah, I think like, I was just like thinking of Lucic, because that's kind of the thing we've noticed, right? Is like, he still has an effective hockey mind and can make good plays. It's just like his body, you know, the old boots don't work as yeah. well. So I think I don't want to compare him to Lucic because he's definitely not. That's slow, but
that's probably a good comparison though. If you look at Lucic's age and what he used to be able to do, the what he yeah. can do now, it's like, I think Kent Wilson said it the best, like his mind is there, but his feet aren't.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you can see what he wants to be able to do and he just can't do it.
Yeah.
So the thing that I think works in tandem's favor though is, like you said, like he's not going to be relied upon as a forward would be to be like rushing up the ice, right? It's like his strength still, and hopefully they'll carry over, is like moving the puck out of the zone, getting it out of the zone,
yeah.
like controlling the puck in the defensive zone and moving it up the ice. So hopefully that's something he can do. And like you said, like the body checking thing is interesting because I've been watching some of his highlights and some of his games. He's not super physical at all.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it.
Not at all.
He's a warrior though.
Yeah, like he's not out hammering guys like you'd expect. Like that's kind of what I was expecting, but it doesn't sound like that.
Just a elite shot blocker.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the other thing that like you were saying, what his puck control, his transition game is surprisingly good in terms of like moving the puck out of the D zone.
Well, there's the hockey sense for you though.
Yeah. Like really good. A lot of his, I was just looking at some of his micro stats, exits and puck control in the defensive zone.
Yeah.
Really a lot better than I would have thought.
And here's your fun fact to tie that in a bow.
Okay.
Game 5 of the 2011 Stanley Cup finals, teammate Kevin Bieksa highlighted his calm on ice demeanor. So this is always a thing that you see in you know, playoff games and high pressure games, late in games. Do people kind of panic and they act too fast, or do they have patience even like in the most high pressure situations? It sounds like he's more so of the latter. So Bieksa commenting on his on ice demeanor said that he, quote, he could have played with a cigarette in his mouth.
That's pretty good. Is that just because he probably had a lot more teeth back then, I guess?
Well, he's just calm, cool, and collective, man. He's yeah. just like, so I think, I don't know, given our kind of analysis and what we're reading into here in terms of the player we're going to get, maybe he might pair best with Anderson, to be honest. So what does that look like for me? That looks like Valimaki Gio as your top pairing, maybe later in the season. And then your second pairing might be Tanev and Anderson.
The only reason I would say is just because he is a right-hand shot. And I know the Flames have made like a huge deal about like lefty righty. I don't know. Has he ever played the left side? I don't know.
I think they've all played both at some point or another.
So that's the only thing I would say about pairing him with Anderson. But I mean, Anderson and Tanev on the same. Those would be some deep shutdown minutes. Like you couldn't get a shot on net against those two guys in their peaks. So
now that might not be good for Anderson's offensive progression, which we'd like to see, but he's probably going to progress a little more playing with a player like Gio. But I don't know, if I'm just looking at Tanev as a player as a whole and what we have back there, or maybe it's Valimaki.
Yeah. Maybe he plays with Valimaki, younger guy.
Either way, I'm seeing Noah Hanifin slotting down eventually.
I don't know. I really want to watch him play because fuck, we've been talking about this for like, it seems forever. We've had
5 days
hockey. Jeez
Louise. Actually 4 days.
I'm so sick of being like, well, let's look at the numbers. It's like, I just want to fucking watch these guys play so bad, but I think we will see, right? Like, and it kind of, in one sense, in a major sense, it scares the living shit out of me when you have so many contingencies. It's like, okay, well, Gio can't fall off a cliff. Tanev better stay healthy / get his shit together again. Hanifin needs to take a step. Anderson needs to take a step. Valimaki needs to take a step. Shillington and or Nesterov need to be better. So in that sense, it's like, oh man, that's a lot of ifs, right?
Well, then, especially for a team that struggled so much defensively, that apparently is a defensive oriented team.
Exactly. So, but on the flip side of that, it's like, okay, I am interested because there is some room for, because I mean, we've complained about it in the forward ranks. It's like these guys can never develop because there's all these old guys taking all their spots. It's like, I think we'll know pretty quickly. I don't know. We might know, like, if Tanev comes out and he's struggling the first 10 games, maybe there's some movement there, but I just want to get my eyes on this guy. I want to see if he's as terrible as I'm hoping. Like, I've been watching some of the Canucks playoff footage and it's like, man, he was rough. Like, God love him for like playing hard, but like the dude got smoked in those playoff series. Like, and Quinn Hughes too. Like, those guys were really rough. Jacob Markstrom,
was that against the Avs?
That was against Vegas.
Vegas, yeah.
Like, they got rolled.
That's what I meant.
Like, they got rolled. Like, Markstrom.
Well, Markstrom
and Demko were insane.
It is Vegas though, man. They slice and dice all defensemen. Yeah. Doesn't matter who.
So I'm very nervous, but I'm also very curious. I think in a perfect world, again, he's making $4.5 million, so this is never going to be a perfect world. But I think, like you said, in a perfect world, Valimaki moves into the top four. And, like, honestly, my dream is to see a pairing of Valimaki and Rasmus. If you could roll your top four as Valimaki, Ras, Gio, Tanev, Shillington, Hanifin.
Yeah, that'd be like sweet. That.
So I think there's the two players who instantly will probably be playing together, Hanifin and Tanev. They can probably both drop down depending on how they play. Like, I'm kind of changing my tune on Noah Hanifin a little bit. Not really I'm changing my tune, but it's like I'm crossing my fingers and I was like, okay, this guy needs to get his shit now.
You're building him up, man.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying this positive
just
approach
so he can let you down.
Exactly. I'm trying this positive approach for once, so when it goes horribly awry, I can tell everybody to fuck off and say, see, I was right in the first place.
Then
now I never have to be positive again.
Then you will triple down.
Exactly.
All right, so let's move to Nesterov and see if we have anything else you want to say on
Tanev. Well, yeah, I just think, like, I still think signing him at this age, at this point in his career, is a mistake. At that money, again, I have no problem with bringing him in as an accessory piece. I don't like having him here when he's so injury prone, and it's not like was just bad last year. Like, he went from being really good between like 50, I mean, even going back further from like 11 back when he first entered the league, like really good. Probably his best season was 17-18 to dropping off a cliff. That's not a good sign for somebody who like turns 30 and falls off an absolute cliff. So I'm hoping he can be serviceful, but I'm not holding my breath.
What do you think his true value is compared to his book value now?
Like, I mean, even if, and it's not even the dollar, I think, right? It's the total, like the 4 years. Like, if you'd send him to 4.5 per 2 years, I wouldn't mind that at all. Like, I mean, in terms of what he's like, he's probably $2 to $3 million would be a decent range.
Yeah, like a three, like even like a 3.2 if you wanted to.
Like something similar to what Hamonic was making before. But it's just like, again, like, and we went on and on about this in the UFA episode. It's like all the deals, like all these bargain deals.
Yeah.
These guys are getting cheap ass money and we give Tanev a king's ransom. So I don't know. I'm willing to give him a chance. I'm just pretty wary. If they started him on the top pairing with Gio, I'd be pretty freaked out.
Well, that's still not out of the question because he's been with Gio for the most of camp so far. But
him and Gio are buddies, training buddies too. So maybe Gio's showing him his secret sauce or some shit.
Yeah, maybe. Eh? He's going to revitalize his career. Watch this. Tanev is going to win the Norris.
I would love nothing more.
Let's go to Nikita Nesterov. It's probably Nestorov, eh?
Nestorov? Well, the way I pronounce Russian names, maybe.
So we have a Russian. I know, as of just out of the blue, you start loving Russians now. You're a Russian lover now.
I'm loving this. Like the draft, they got, who did they draft? Nikhailov, Jan Kuznetsov, Chechelev. I'm loving this Russian thing. The thing with Nesterov, though, it's like, I don't know. Like I've been talking to some people who watch the KHL and they're like, oh, you're sleeping on Nesterov. It's like, we've kind of seen this song and dance before, right? Where the Flames signed somebody. Like, I think the most famous one is like Roman Chervenka. I remember that one.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, he's the best player. Not in the NHL. He's so good. And it's like, he gets here and he sucks ass. So that's the only reason I'm a little wary on Nesterov, because it's like, I don't watch the KHL. I don't know.
All right. Let's do a little bit of backstory on Nesterov so people are aware, because this is a kind of a guy that flies under the radar, obviously.
Yeah.
So he was drafted both the NHL and the KHL, drafted by the Tampa Bay Lightning round 5, 148th overall in 2011. So, but he decided that he was going to go to the K first, was there for 2 seasons, and then that's when he signed with Tampa Bay and spent 2 seasons with Tampa Bay. His first season he was in and out of the A. So he played 27 games his first season with Tampa and then 57 a second. He's not an offensive guy. He's not touted as an offensive guy. He's strictly defense. I don't know if you know much more about his game other than he's probably a defense first type guy.
Well, it's interesting because all I can go off is the NHL numbers.
Yeah.
Really, because like there's like no numbers in the KHL really that I can find in terms of underlying. So he did actually see some decent offensive results in Tampa Bay. Even strength, he didn't play much in the power play, but, I mean, his first year, like 14-15, where what did he play? He barely played any games.
27.
Yeah. He's actually had some decent on ice results. And by decent, I mean like barely above replacement.
Yeah. As far as counting stats, 2 goals, 5 assists.
Yeah.
It's not so bad. Like first season in the NHL.
He was okay. Really the most notable thing that I kind of saw from him was a decent presence on the power play.
Okay.
So like he could maybe he's a pinch.
I doubt you're going to see him on this team on the power play though.
Yeah, no chance. But like that's really the only metric that stood out for me in his time in the NHL is like, okay, he scored a few goals and he was maybe okay on the power play.
Okay. So that first year with Tampa, he played 17 playoff games. So he's got some playoff experience, 9 playoff games the next season with Tampa. So his third season with Tampa, he was traded probably at the deadline, I'm assuming. Yeah, it looks like it.
Yeah, it looks like it.
To the Canadiens. And I'm sure he was going to be a UFA at that point or RFA, one or the other. But he did not re-sign with the Canadiens. He went back to the KHL. And that's where he spent his last 3 seasons. So, like you said, we've done this before, and look, I don't love it. I don't hate it. I'm curious to see how it plays out. But regardless, it sounds like he's going to be on the team opening lineup just due to Shillington being out. So we're going to get a good look at him right away. And so right now they got him paired with, who is it?
They had him paired with Valimaki. No? Yeah.
Yeah. Valimaki.
Yuso's going to carry him.
Yeah.
But I mean, like I'm willing to give it a chance. Like some of our followers on Instagram watch the KHL more closely than I do. And I posted some stuff and I was like, I don't know if I'm really expecting much. And they were like, no, he's been pretty good over in the KHL.
The thing is you can never compare an apple to an orange, dude. So,
yeah. And I mean, even you can plug in, like there's translation metrics and stuff, but like, honestly, like, I haven't watched the KHL, so I can't give you my honest, like fully formed opinion on what Nikita Nesterov is going to do for this team. But I mean, as a seventh guy, I don't mind it, right? Like he comes from Tampa Bay. Like if Stevie Y drafted him,
yep.
That's enough for me, right?
I mean, look at his resume. It's not staggering, but he's got a lot of hockey experience and he's played in the NHL quite a bit. He played for Tampa. He's been through that organization. So, you know, a team wanted him at the deadline. So,
well, and I believe he was captain of his team in is it CSKA Moscow? I believe he's captain. Yeah, I mean, like, he's put up some decent numbers, right? Like, 23 points in 53 games. I don't have any access to any KHL underlying numbers, but you know, like, I'm fine with it, right? Yeah, like, why not? It's better than just signing some. Let me say this. I will take this, a guy who has some skill, who is younger, than signing a guy who's like big and he's gonna be gritty and can, you know. Yeah. I'll take this 10 times out of 10 over what usually you see with defenseman signings, is just like another big guy who can't skate, who can't move the puck. I'll take a mobile puck moving defenseman with a little bit of offensive upside, who comes from a place like Tampa Bay, 10 times out of 10 over somebody like Michael Stone, where it's like, oh, he's big, he's experienced, blah, 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 all that bullshit.
Yeah. And it's not like he's coming into, you know, fill a massive hole in the top four, top two pairings. So he's going to play, you know, third pairing. He might even be your seventh D man from time to time. I'm sure it'll be a battle between him and Shillington. And then you got to expect we're going to have some injuries on the back end. So you'll see them both at some point. Hopefully we don't go through what we did last season and have two defensemen go down and Michael Stone comes back into the lineup. We're going to see Michael Stone. I'm never wrong. Every single time I go out and say it's not over yet, it just never ends. So he will be in the lineup. Mark my words.
Dude, like, why do you have to say that? Like, no, why?
Just being a realist.
Well, maybe they'll just sign him to a minor league deal and we won't see him.
Look, after finding that love letter in the dressing room, it's pretty obvious we're going
to
see him.
That's pretty damning evidence, I have to admit. Right? I'm trying to find this goddamn message this guy on Instagram sent me about Nesterov. He was just giving me a good breakdown, but I can't find it.
All right. Anything else on Nesterov, or can we move to Connor Mackey?
The only thing I'll say about Nesterov is that I love the number 89. I know Alan Quine wore it last year. And I kind of wish they'd signed Alan Quine. He's with the Oilers now, but 89, like, damn. The fact that nobody wears 89 on the Flames, like, very often, like, that's a sexy ass number.
How about 98? Did you hear about that debacle in Edmonton?
Jesus Christ.
Was that Math? Who was that? Maths?
That was Bob. Was it Stauffer? I think it was Bob Stauffer or Jim Matheson.
Yeah, it was Matheson.
Holy shit. If you haven't heard the story, I guess Jesse Puljujarvi's back in town, right?
Yeah, he wants to wear number 98.
But that's not allowed.
No, because it's one number next to Gretzky, so you can't wear either one of the numbers. You can't wear 99 or 98.
Why don't they just ban numbers? Like, no numbers.
Like, it doesn't make any sense. So he got, rightably so, attacked pretty hardcore on Twitter. He was crying about
being attacked. Dude, that's the most Edmonton shit ever. That's the most boomer Edmonton reporter shit of all time. Like, who would ever want to play in Edmonton? Like, I know we have did you hear what Francis asked Dubé today or yesterday?
What? No, I didn't hear it.
It's so stupid. It's the and you I'll send it to you later. And somebody on Instagram posted it and shared it with me. He, like, Dubé is doing his press availability, and Francis is going on for like 20 minutes about he asked Dubé if he, like, he's like, oh, there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be selecting you in fantasy hockey this year. How do you feel about that? Does that make you nervous about your expectations? And Dubé is just like, you can see him just like be like, what the fuck is this guy asking me? It was just an absolute. is he talking about? Fantasy hockey?
Gum on a shoe.
Those tough questions, you know?
All right, let's go to Connor Mackey. So now, obviously, out of the three pickups, this is the most intriguing. I'll preface with this. This offseason, he was all right, well, let me back up a bit, and we'll get to this offseason. So the backstory on Connor Mackey, he's U.S. born, right? He's been playing in the U.S. development system.
Yeah, he's been in the NCAA and stuff, yeah.
Went to NCAA. The interesting side note on Mackey is prior to beginning his college career in 2017, he actually attended the Calgary Flames summer prospect development camp.
Yeah, that's what's interesting. When you read up about it, the Flames have kind of been trying to woo this guy for a while.
They've had their eye on him.
Yeah.
So, and then he had a great first season in college, made the all-star rookie team. And then he went to Buffalo the next season.
To their development camp,
but didn't sign. And then he was an all-star team the next year in college. And then let's see, he led his team last year in 24 points in 36 games en route to being named again to the all-star team, first all-star team. So he's had a lot of success at the collegiate level. Most notably though, I think is his performance last year led Frank Cervelli, TSN insider,
old Frankie boy,
to name him as the top ranked college free agent defenseman on the market. So the fact that the Flames were able to lure him to Calgary is interesting. It's intriguing. I think people are intrigued by it. Is it safe to call him a prospect? What is Connor Mackey? It's not as rare as a Derek Ryan going through the University of Alberta, but it's, you know, for a guy that comes from the U.S. system, we don't see him in junior here. And then coming out of college, how is he going to fare at the NHL level, even the AHL level? We're going to see him play in the AHL this season, would be my guess. But like, what do you make of this?
Well, it's hard to make anything of it really concrete, right? When he has never played in the NHL, he's never played pro. I've never watched him play in the NCAA until I've watched some highlights after the Flames signed him. So it's hard to know what to make. It's always hard when these college free agent guys, right? Because like, do you remember like how many of these guys have the Flames signed? It's like, ooh, you got Spencer Fu. Like, remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, he's most sought after free agent. I was like, wow. Which,
did you see his goal he scored the other day?
Ooh, Spencer Fu?
Yeah, he scored an absolute beauty. I'll send it to you after this.
Like it's always hard to know, right?
Yeah.
And it's always going to be like that with guys that are on unknown quantity. So it's hard to be like, I think people get probably too caught up in the like, he's the best free agent. It's like I was talking about with Cervenka. It's like the best player is not in the NHL. It's like, well, you know, like until they play in the NHL, we don't know. Right. So like, yeah. I think I'm excited and I'm not telling people not to be excited, but it's really hard to know until you've seen him play pro like at all.
Yeah.
And that's why people are always like, oh, is Mackey going to be on the team? I was like, I don't know. He's literally never played a pro game in his life. I don't know. Like maybe.
Yeah. This isn't, you know, playing college, comparing college to NHL level, it's not even apples to oranges. It's, you know, it's a vegetable. It's not even in the fruit family. So, and I mean, you know, you look at the World Juniors that we just watched and the amount of prospects in that tournament is mind boggling. That's why it's so exciting to watch. But a lot of those guys won't even have an NHL career, even though, you know, 85% of them are drafted to NHL teams. So you just never know when you hit the college level, you mature to a certain age. Can you put it all together? Is it destiny? Like look at Matt Stajan coming into the league. We just had him on, you know, everything was clicking into place. And then he ends up in Calgary under Brett Sutter, demoted to the fourth line. And just, you know, some guys, it just, everything goes right. Yeah. We had Christopher Stieg on first year in the league, he's winning Stanley Cups. So, I mean, it's just kind of like, it's all timing for a lot of these situations. Obviously skill is first and foremost, but there's a big timing factor to it. So we'll see.
It's like, remember, like, was it Danny DeKeyser? Like, I remember he was the big, this was a long time ago. I'm dating myself. This was like in like 10, maybe even 10 years ago.
Back in my day.
Yeah, seriously. It's like, oh, Dan DeKeyser. It's like Danny DeKeyser. He's the best college player. He's the best college player. Oh, somebody can get him. Like they're gonna be set. And it's like Detroit got him and it was like this big deal. And it's like he's played in the league, but he like only really had like one good year, right? So it's hard to say.
The fact that when you say that, I'm like, okay, I recognize the name, but who the hell is he?
Exactly, right?
So
yeah. So like in terms of what Mackey could be, like I think the Flames definitely think he could be a player. Otherwise they wouldn't go through this whole rigmarole of the past few years, you know, trying to woo him to come to their team. Right. Like,
yeah.
And the Flames have always kind of USA hockey has been a, well, they've kind of gone to, they have some scouts out there. So
they've done it well.
Yeah, for sure. So I do think that they think, and they would know better than we are, seeing as they're paid to do this. They think that Mackey can play in the NHL. And I mean, we'll have to see him play in the pro league before we can make that assumption. But I think like he seems like he could be a decent bottom pairing middle guy. You know, he's a big guy who can skate. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Right.
Hey, well, Gio said he's close to being an NHLer. So, I mean, if that's not just Gio being a nice guy, which it probably just is, then, you know,
Mark, he doesn't even know who he's talking about. It's like, oh, I thought you were talking about the other guy.
No, like it doesn't matter who he's talking about. Yeah. He's really good.
He's really good.
So I don't think the intention on Bradtree Living & Co. is that Mackey plays NHL games this season, unless we're in a super pinch. Like Stone's probably going to slot above him anyways. But you know, if there's a situation where, hey, we're out of the playoffs with 10 games left, we already know, then you might see Mackey come in. But I think as far as development strategy for, you know, the organization, they want to see him play in the A this year.
Yeah.
He's only on a 1-year contract. So he's on a 925 and then he's restricted free agent after the season.
Well, and the other thing is too, like everyone's like, oh, we'll probably see him. It's like he doesn't have to clear waivers. So he's one of the definite guys who's easily a guy you can send down. No problem.
Right.
So there's that factor too. Where Shillington and Nesterov do.
Shillington have to clear waivers and Nesterov. So those guys will be taxi squad. You're going to see them above Mackey pretty much all season.
Yeah. So I think like with a guy like that, sure, there's probably talent there. There's probably a lot of raw talent there.
He'll probably curb your enthusiasm. Yeah,
exactly. And again, we need to see him play pro. Like I off the top of my head, I don't really know any 24-year-old guys who have been undrafted, signed in the NHL, and then come into the NHL without playing in the AHL first. Like, it's definitely me taking a stab at something, but it doesn't sound like something that happens too often, unless it's like a very exceptional situation. So I, like you said, the Flames are probably going to want to see him play pro before he gets NHL minutes, unless he just like is lights out and they have tons of injuries.
Yeah.
But he'll probably be in the A, I'm sure, or in the taxi squad to start.
Where do you, looking at now, as we've gone through a little bit of we focused a bit on defense. We've covered the newcomers. As far as comparing this defensive core to the rest of the division, where do we sit? I mean, there's not really a really strong defensive core on any team necessarily, maybe outside of Toronto, but where do you see us sitting in the division?
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say is like the North Division has probably the weakest defense cores of all the divisions, right?
There's
like,
a lot of star set of power up front and in net.
Yeah, like it's going to be a lot of scoring and a lot of difficult nights for goaltenders. Like, can you imagine McDavid and Matthews going ahead to get against the Winnipeg Jets? Like, geez, Louise. So, like, I think the Flames, like, I think Toronto is probably number one. I mean, there maybe could be an argument that, you know, Montreal like maybe has a slight edge, because I do think Shea Weber is still really good and Jeff Petrie is really underrated.
Kulak
too. They got some younger guys there. Trotz, all right. Mede can probably play. So I would probably, if I'm handicapping it, like I think the Flames are definitely in the top tier. Like their defense is better than Edmonton's. It's better than Winnipeg's. Like, we don't even have to include Ottawa in this discussion. And I mean, Vancouver is a total mess back there too. So I think it's really between, I think there's a top tier that includes Toronto, Calgary, and Montreal. And then it's pretty much everybody else. Okay. So it's stronger than it's definitely an advantage over the Oilers and the Jets, but it's probably in the similar range as the Canadiens. And then I think the Leafs D is better. Do you agree? That assessment?
Yeah, it sounds about right.
It's just like when you look at, again, if you look at it on paper, like the Leafs, like their defense is way better on paper. We'll see how that works out. I do think the Flames still, like, who's the best defenseman? Like, who has the best single defenseman in the entire North Division? I think you could maybe make an argument that Gio is still pretty high on that list.
Top three for sure.
Oh, top three for sure. Like, could you not argue that he's not number one?
Yeah, you could.
Who else is the best? Who yet? I'd say probably between him and Jeff Petrie and, like, obviously Quinn Hughes, but Quinn Hughes is still really young.
What about Schmidt?
I like Schmidt, but he's probably, yeah, he's probably working his way up there, but I still think he's definitely below Gio.
Yeah. We just might see, you know, guys go to another level this season.
Yeah, totally. Like even Erasmus and stuff. But I mean, if you had to say who has the best defenseman on their team in the North Division, like I still think it is Mark Giordano. Still think he is the most effective defenseman.
Well, and then like you look at Anderson and Valimaki, like those are no slouches. If Tanev can resemble anything, if Hanifin can step it up, if Shillington takes another step, like an argument could be like, well, it'll have to see how it plays out. I think you're right. We're in the top three, but nothing's set in stone in that top three.
Yeah. Like I'd rather have Quinn Hughes than Giordano right now. But I mean, if you're talking about who's going to be better this year, like if Mark Giordano continues to be Mark Giordano, I think the Flames are in the conversation with Toronto for the best decor because like, Gio is still like, again, like for all the talk about he had a rough playoff, like the dude was still so good last year. And I mean, I don't see Anderson taking a step back. He was awesome last year. Like he was probably, He's only going to get better. I mean, you cross your fingers and hope Hanifin's going to get better. But I mean, I think an argument can be made the Flames, if it's Gio and Anderson as the top pairing, that's the best top pairing.
I think when I cross my fingers with regards to Hanifin, I just hope he doesn't get any worse.
That's a good point.
So,
but Schmidt and Quinn Hughes are going to be a really dynamite pairing.
Yeah, especially in the power play, man, it's going to be deadly. Yeah. So, but now if you factor in, you know, the goaltender into it, because that's their last line of defense, right? If you factor in the goaltending, and they're, you know, maybe this all Canadian division has the best goaltending in the league. I don't know. I haven't really compared it to the other divisions. But there's some pretty good goalies in this division. If you throw Markstrom into the equation as your sixth player, your third defenseman back there, does that change anything for you? Or are we still, if you add him in as part of the defensive team, are we still maybe around third, or does that bump us up at all?
No, I still think you're in that group with Montreal and Toronto. Because Price again, Winnipeg has Hellebuck, but their defense is terrible. The Oilers defense is terrible.
Hey man, they got Mike Smith.
Mike Smith. I think Koskinen's okay, but they've shown a propensity to play Smith. So they're out. Ottawa's out, obviously.
I think they learned their lesson, man. We're not going to see much Michael Smith this year, dude, unfortunately.
Who knows?
But they have the most back-to-back games. Did you see that?
The Oilers?
Yeah, they have the most. They have tied for the most back-to-back games in the
league. Well, I was just looking at the evolving hockey projections for the season. They have the Oilers finishing second last in the North Division.
Is that the one where they have was it Montreal finishing first?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my hot take, but we'll see.
The more I think about that hot take, the more I like it.
Yeah, it's a good hot take.
That's a good
hot
take.
That or the Oilers, that's my hot take, but I'm going Montreal first.
I like it. Right. But I mean, yeah, it's probably like because again, Freddie Anderson is still really good. It's probably, and again, if Carey Price, like, remember Woodley was talking about how good he thinks Price is going to be this year. So I still think it's like those two, three teams are the best defensive teams because it's like the other Winnipeg, again, great goalie, terrible defense. Edmonton, not great goaltending, terrible defense. So it's not a hard bar to be set, but between those three teams, you know what? Like I probably would give the Flames like a slight edge if you're including Markstrom, just because Anderson had a rough year last year for the Leafs.
Okay. Well, let's finish things off with this. Rank your Calgary Flames defenseman from 1 to 8. I don't want to see Stone on that list around number 9. So 1 to 8, go.
Remember when we said this was going to be half an hour today? It's like an hour. Okay. 1 to 8. Gio still for me is number 1.
Me too.
Gio, Rasmus, number 2. It's just based on right now, it's Hanifin 3. 4 is Valimaki. 5 is Tanev. 6 is Shillington. 7 is Nesterov. 8 is Mackey.
Okay. Now, it's interesting because with you and me, this is very similar, but there's some discrepancies for sure. I think the biggest difference is how the light that you view Hanifin and Tanev and the light that I view Hanifin and Tanev, I still think, at least going into the season, Tanev is the better defenseman. Just from what I've seen from Hanifin, I'm not in an optimistic place with you yet. He's gonna have to prove that.
Dude, I'm doing this to cope. All right.
Okay, well, I like it, but I'm gonna go with Geo 1. Drum roll, number 2, Valimaki.
You love Valley.
Anderson 3, Tanev 4, Hanifin 5, Shillington 6, Nesterov 7, Mackey 8.
I gotta admire your foresight.
All right, so there you have it. There's the focus on our defense. Look, we're it's funny, hey, when we picked up, you know, Travis Hamonic, and we were, oh, there's a top defenseman in the top defensive team in the league. And, you know, Hamonic kind of was a bit of a dud as far as living up to his expectations. But by no means are we a defensive juggernaut if you're looking at the defenseman. But if these guys do take steps, and I mean, obviously we're not expecting Gio to take a step, but if he can, you know, curb his regression as well as Tanev and, you know, give us another 1 or 2 years of the hockey that they can play, and all these other guys take big leaps, Valimaki, Hanifin, Shillington, and Anderson, then, hey, in 2-3 years, maybe even 2 years, it might be a different story.
Yeah, Valimaki is the X factor in all this, I think.
Yeah.
Like, okay. if he is, not even if he's lights out, if he's good, then you're fine.
Yeah. I agree. So there's your defensive focus for the day, and then we'll see how training camp continues to roll. They got a game Monday. I'm not sure if they play more games.
I believe that's it.
That's the last one before the home opener.
Pretty sure.
So things are rounding out here, but we'll talk to you before the home opener.
So you like hockey? Congratulations. You're amongst the smartest sports fans in the world. Want to fight about it? Join me, the Hockey Troll, and that snack, Polly Cupcakes, every Monday and Thursday on the official Caps Chirp podcast, repping the greatest team in the NHL, your Washington Capitals.
Not only do we bring you the best Washington Capitals coverage, but we've got the hottest takes and the tastiest content.
Tune in wherever you get your podcast and at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com. Chirp us on all social media platforms at Caps Chirp.
See you beauties and benders there.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.